You're listening to the Monster Sci-Fi Show.
Hey there, Monster Sci-Fi Show fans, and welcome back to the Monster Sci-Fi Show. I am the one and only host, The Monster, and for today's podcast, I had recorded an interview with a comic book illustrator, and his name is Ralph Cabrera. Luckily for me, he was able to do a program called How to Draw Comics with Ralph Cabrera, oddly enough. So, at the end of the program, Ralph was gracious and kind enough to give me some time to do this interview. I also had a special guest, and his name was Arnold Chu. He and I worked together at the International Mall Library, and he was the illustrator for the little mini comic book that we worked on called Star Wars Aliens vs. Jedi. With that, I hope you enjoyed the podcast. I hope you enjoyed the interview. Let me know what you think.
How did you start in this industry, basically?
Okay, as a kid, I guess like everybody else, I was reading comic books. In fact, my first glimpse of a comic book was, I remember my dad used to take us to the flea market in Hialeah. It used to be 7-Eleven across the street. I hated going over to the flea market. It was hot, stingy, not a place an 8-year-old wants to be. But I remember there were Slurpees at the end of the day, so that was always a good thing. One day I remember that a little later on, I was having problems in school, and this is a true story. I was having problems in school with my reading. My teacher told my parents, you know, it doesn't really matter what he reads. As long as he reads, he'll capture it. You just need to entice it. He's got to wrap himself around words. So one day, again, at the flea market, on the way out, went to 7-Eleven. And Lord and behold, back then in 7-Elevens, there used to be comic books. And the first one that caught my eye wasn't just a regular comic book. It was Superman versus Muhammad Ali, which is one of the big treasury ones.
I remember those. The giant comics.
Neil Adams did that, and I was blown away. I told my dad, I got to have it. Back then, there were only $2.50, which is a bargain nowadays. But back then, when the books were 25, 30 cents, it was a little more expensive. But my dad put in two and two together. He said, well, you know what? He wants to read it. The teacher said he should read. So I got to thank that teacher, whoever she was. So right there and then, I got hooked on it. And not only was I reading them and collecting them, but later on, I noticed that I had an inkling for drawing. I used to trace over all the characters, and I remember one day, and I got to a point where I was pretty good at tracing. And then one day, a friend of mine said, you know what, you're pretty good at that, but can you do it out of your head? So I've always liked the challenge, and I started doing that, which was very difficult. Soon after, around the same time, I started showing up at comic book conventions around here. There used to be a guy called Vince Manila in the late 70s and all throughout the 80s. Used to do comic book conventions in Golden Glades Interchange at the Holiday Inn. I went there, and that's the first time I ever met a comic book artist. And if I liked comics before, this one blew me away. I got to meet some of the ones, a few of them ended up being personal friends even up till today. We didn't hit it off back then because I was too young. But later on, I'll tell you the story after. But I saw John Byrne, Pat Broderick, good personal friend of mine even up until today, Mike Zeck. Good friend. Actually, he's the one that helped me get my first job at Marvel in DC. And Bob McLeod, I used to be his apprentice also later on. Just a lot of great guys. And ever since then, I was hooked. And the way I started was I started showing my work to them later on. And they told me what I needed to correct my work. And next time I saw them, they noticed I took them seriously, so they took me seriously. Next thing one led to another, and throughout time, it just progressed. And again, this is where Mike Zeck comes in. It got to the point where when I was adult and knew enough, Mike Zeck walked me in the Marvel and DC offices, and that's where I got my first work. So,
as far as your very first job working in the comics, you talked about in the presentation that it was really Marvel that was your first official one for comics, or is it DC you said?
My first official comic was, I forgot the name of the company, but it was called Megaton.
Okay.
A lot of people started off with that book, and in fact, one of them you'll probably know, Eric Larson. He did a lot of Spider-Man for Marvel and left in the mid-90s to start Image. Mm-hmm. He's been doing Savage Dragon ever since.
Right. Okay.
So we both started with that one book. So it's pretty funny.
Out of all the heroes that you drew for Marvel Comics,
right,
which one was one of your favorites?
Okay. At first, it had to be the character, of course, because that's the first thing you want to get into. So it ended up being Spider-Man. Not that I got it in that particular order. I had to work from my way up,
right,
from my work down up, let's say. But definitely Spider-Man. The Thing has always been like, I've always liked drawing The Thing, but he's always been like impossible for me for whatever reason. There's something about the rock formation I just could not grasp, and that took me like forever.
Now, is it like the lumpy kind or the like solid rock?
The rocky type, yeah. Okay. The lumpy type, that was way back in the 60s and early 70s.
Okay.
By the time I got in, he's the rock formation that we see and know now.
And so is that the most, like, the least favorite one? Is The Thing, or is it something even worse?
It's one that I've always liked, but it's always been like a pain in my back. Because I could never get them down right. Even up until today, I still don't think I do a good Thing.
Right.
Maybe because, I don't know, I had such a difficult time with him when I was young.
Now, when you worked with writers, when you got a project, you got a script.
Correct.
How did you find yourself at times like your vision versus the writer's vision? Did it ever mesh, or did you kind of have two different ideas?
Okay. You have two different kinds of scripts, which is the open script, which is pretty much open up to you. And then you have a really tight script where the writer tells you, in this frame, so many frames per page, this is what I want per frame. And this is what I want included in the frame. So you're kind of stifled when you're working with somebody like that. It's good in the beginning because you're being told what to do. It's much easier. You don't have to think as much. You just have to read and put it down on paper. The other way around with people like Roy Thomas, which, by the way, he writes Conan, my favorite Conan scribe, he writes it pretty loose. A lot of times he'll say, you know what, from page 2 to 5, this is what's going to go on. And maybe he'll just type a page, and it's up to you to break it down however you see fit. Now, by doing that, you're in more control. It's much harder to fit. But you have more control because you can pick the size of the panel, how many frames, you can space it out, you can time it out. You have more input, more leeway. And as far as the actual words on the book, you don't have that. You only have a gist of what's going on. Somebody is going inside a cab, you get pulled out, got beaten up, giant foot lands on the cab, and then we reveal that it's the Sentinels or something. Something as basic as that. Now, it's up to you to figure out how much space does that deserve in the contents of 22 pages,
right,
along with everything else. So it's up to you to break it down into a pattern. That's why you do a lot of thumbnails.
Right.
Make sure you fit it all. I remember, in fact, 2 days ago, I was reading a book he did, and he said he was actually doing Conan, and he said that at first it was supposed to be a black and white Conan. And black and whites, usually you have a little more time and there are more pages to work with. And at the end they said, you know what, we're not going to be doing this in black and white. We're going to stick it inside the regular Conan, which is 22 pages. And he just had a heck of a time trying to do it. When he figured out he was on page 18, he called up Marvel and said, you know what, I need to page 26. And according to him, they had to cut and splice and make it fit to 22 pages.
Wow.
So it's not as easy as what it sounds.
No, is that always the standard of just the 22 pages? Or because now
22, 23.
Right. But now we'll become more digital. Do you think that's going to change in the future?
Okay. Well, as long as you're talking about print, to make it cost effective, you have to know how many pages you're printing because you are being charged per book.
Right.
So the more pages, the more you're going to have to dish out, which means the more the consumer is going to have to pay. But as far as a digital comic book, like the ones they're trying to push now on the net, that's really up to them, however long they think they need to tell a story.
Okay. Arnold, did you want to ask your question?
Yeah, I have a question. I just wanted to get your opinion on something.
Mm-hmm.
It can be argued that people are not buying comic books the way they did 20, 30 years ago. So where do you think comic books are going now? Do you see it being completely changed with the impact of technology? Like you mentioned, the internet videos that can be, the comic books as a video instead of actual pages.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. There's two ways of looking at this, I think. I'm old school, so let me go back and tell you what I think happened. Back in the mid-80s and early 90s, the people who were mostly buying the comics were the same people who grew up. There's always been an audience for comics, but I think from the 70s and 80s, that's where it mostly grew. And if you ask me now, especially if you go to a convention, you'll notice that the crowd that goes, you see a couple of kids, but they're the minority. The majority are the grown-ups coming in with their kids. So I'm looking at it like we haven't fully, we lost that audience for a while, and we really haven't fully picked it up. And what's really making it for us is the ones who used to collect and are still collecting. Now, that's a good thing. And the bad thing is that those collectors are the ones who made the downfall in the 90s, early 90s. Comics has always been something you want to treasure, you want to look at, you want to read, and then you keep if you want to collect, but first of all, it should be read, it should be savored, it should be enjoyed. And the when prices started going up, a lot of collectors said, you know what, I'm just going to buy, instead of one, I'm going to buy 20 number ones. And with all the alternate covers they were doing in the 90s.
Yeah, the variants.
All the variants. Yeah. They said, I'm going to buy five of these because I really don't know which one's going to be worth. So the same person was buying all those books, but yet the demographic said, all these books, we thought we had a bigger audience, and it was really the same gene pool that was buying. Mm-hmm. Now, that's one. And number two, and I think, I remember a friend of mine had a comic shop. His name was Steve, and he used to have Coral Comics. This is back in the mid-'80s, early 90s. And I remember that he used to get the comics and from Diamond, which they're still around today. Now, Diamond would say, if you order X amount of books, I'll give you a certain percentage off. And if you order more books, more percentage off. The more you buy, the more you save, which is the way, you know, retail works. Mm-hmm. Something happened in the early 90s that Marvel bought out a distributor. I forgot which one right now. My mind doesn't know. It's not what it used to be. but they bought a distributor, and Marvel started distributing their own books. Now, the thing is, if you were with Diamond, the majority of the books were really Marvel and DC. If Marvel's not there in the equation, what happens? Now, instead of ordering in a total of, let's say, 300 books that week, let's say 150 were Marvel, now you're not going to get the same percentage off.
Right.
And vice versa, when you went to Marvel to buy from them, they said, well, same deal as with Diamond. You have to buy X amount in order to get so much off. So you had to buy a lot of Marvel, just Marvel books, in order to compete. And I think that created a rift between shop owners and distributors.
Right.
So between all those combined, I think that's where the market fell. Now, your second half was, how does it compare to today?
Yeah, where do you see the future of comic books going? What direction are they going in?
Okay, I would like to see, first of all, a new generation. I'm still not seeing enough of a new generation. The books right now, they're selling, I haven't even seen one in a while, but $3 to $4 a piece, if I'm not mistaken. You can go to Blockbuster and rent a movie for the same price. You can go to Netflix for $8, $9 a month and get all these movies. There's a lot of things to entertain kids. Video games, even through Netflix and through Blockbuster, you can rent video games for $20 for the whole month.
Right.
How can you compete with something like that can give you all that gratification, all those graphics, instead of spending the same amount of money on something that you read 15 minutes later, it's read. So we have to find an audience that will be able to capture what we had. So as far as digital, the new generation, I think, is ready for that. My generation, I don't think it's ready for that. I've seen digital comics. I like what they've done. I see it like, wow, that's neat. But physically, I need to be holding a piece of paper. I even draw on my laptop. But still, I need to physically draw on a piece of paper because
right.
I need that. So, you know, it's two different points of views, I guess. But there still seems to be an audience. And now, thanks to movies and graphic novels, That's really where the market is right now. From what my understanding is, the comics are not selling what they used to be. A regular issue of X-Men could sell 500,000 copies at any given month, and you will get royalties on anything over 40,000 copies. Mm-hmm. So whoever was working on the book, not only do you get paid per your book, but you get a nice royalty check at the end of the month. And, you know, it makes up for the difference. Now the books don't even sell 40,000. If you're lucky, you'll find a book that'll sell 50, 60, 70,000, but nowhere near what it used to be. So royalties and incentives are not there. And, you know, that's really what made me thrive when I was working for them. Those royalty checks really made a big difference. It was a difference between being able to do that and enjoy it and not can have a second job to killing yourself having to do two books a month or a second job.
Right. Now, moving away from DC and Marvel, what we want, Arnold and I were doing was that we were interested in doing our own comics, so we decided to go the old-fashioned, let's use our resources of what we had. We had at the library. We had printer, we had scanner, we had glue, we had scissors, and we made our own comics. Now, you made your own independent work with your wife, so how did that come about?
Okay, my wife is an English teacher by profession, and ever since we had kids, twins 5 years ago, we have three kids, she's become a housewife. I remember that my first daughter, she's going to be 13 now in a couple of weeks. Hey, Candy, she's here with us. And I remember when she went to school, she would come back home a bit sad, saying, well, you know, all my other friends have brothers and sisters, and what's going on with us? Well, let's have one. Well, it's not that simple. And try explaining that to a five-year-old at the time. My wife and I went through, we didn't go through infertility or anything. As far as we went was checking out our plumbing. Everything was fine. It was just not our time. So we left it at that. But it took a while. It took 7 years, actually. So finally, we ended up with twins 5 years ago. But in between, I remember my daughter, Candy, was having a hard time with this. So the book, my wife, because she's an English teacher, she wrote this. She had a passion for it. And then she said, you know what? This would be like a good thing to have for expectant mothers for as a children's book. And many years later, we put it all together, and you know, it's hopefully it's going to be printed before the end of the year.
Now, is it
and it's called My Mommy's Having Twins.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
No, I was going to say, was it done like an independent publisher is doing this for you, or is it a publisher you've been working with?
We had a couple of publishers that were interested in looking at it. We just didn't like what we were reading in the fine detail. Especially when they can keep your book for 5 to 7 years and they don't even have to print. That means they can just keep a hold on it. I didn't like that, and I didn't like certain other things as far as payment. So my wife and I are looking at self-publishing, and we found a way of getting it done cost-effectively and still be able to put something out that's cost-effective for the consumer. And we're quite pleased with the outcome.
Okay. Is it already ready to go, or is it still in the process?
Believe it or not, I have another 2 pages to put on lettering, and it's set to the printer. It's ready to go.
Okay. Now, the other thing that I was looking at as far as resources, that you do a bit of reading for graphic novels, so I'm kind of curious as to what graphic novels do you read as an illustrator?
Okay. Boy, I'm a big fan of Conan. Anybody who goes to my website, they'll testify to that. Robert E. Howard, I thought he was a genius. I really loved what he did. And but I never knew Howard until, again, comics. That's my intro to Conan. And to be able to fit what he had into a comic is really quite a feat. And I think what Marvel did with the black and whites was astronomical. That's what really cemented me to Conan. I thought that was the best work anybody ever did. And the best team for me was the only writer for me in comics. To do Conan is, I can't believe I forgot. I worked with him. In fact, it's right here. Roy Thomas. I'm sorry, Roy, if you ever hear this. but Roy Thomas, my all-time favorite. He's the best scribe for Conan. And the best illustrator for me, again, I'm old school, and the late John Buscema, nobody could beat that. I know there have been others that have been excellent doing the book, and they've all done stuff on it. I myself have been fortunate enough to be to have done Conan and with Roy Thomas. So I felt privileged. I felt like a little kid again when I did that. But nowhere near when John Buscema was doing it. And to me, that had to be the pinnacle.
The question that I was kind of interested in finding out, because of the Conan, was we have the books, we have the movie with Schwarzenegger. Okay. I believe the first one is the true classic, not the second, the Destroyer, which kind of really made things really hate it. I cannot even put it into words how much I hate the second movie. The first
you're
one,
not alone.
Yeah, the first one, and I looked it over again just recently, and it works well with the limited acting abilities of Schwarzenegger, but the presence itself works so well. I'm wondering, since you worked on the book, compared to the movie, how do you feel about the comparison?
Well, I've always had trouble comparing books to movies. They never live up to your expectations. There's something about your mind. If you read that there is a creaking noise in a dark corridor, there is no sound effect, no sun, there's no ILM, there's no nothing that can compare to what your mind can do. So you get instant gratification because you get to see the character, but they'll never live up to what you have in your mind. Even when I put it down on paper, it's still not what I have envisioned. So I have a hard time with that. And now I heard there's a new Conan coming out.
Correct. And this is something that I was holding off until the very end of this interview.
Been waiting for this.
In 2011, there's going to be a brand new Conan. Basically, it's a reboot. And I just wanted to show you the picture of who the new Conan is. And again, I don't care for this, but this is who the person is. They picked. His name is Jason Momoa. He was in Stargate Atlantis, and he plays a character named Dex Ronan, which, oddly enough, rhymes with Conan. But these are the two pictures, and I wanted to get your impressions of that Conan.
Okay.
That right there speaks volumes.
Okay, I'm again, this is subject, not everybody agrees with everything,
right.
So... the picture that I have in my head of Conan, there's nobody that'll ever come close. Arnold, as far as build, came close. His acting came really last. So I'm hoping the only thing that I can see is that they pick somebody who's more or less got the physique of Conan. It could have been bigger.
Right.
But then again, how many big actors do you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you're limited to the because of acting.
Right.
That's one. But I think if they stay true to what Conan is and the way he is, the way he acts, then he might make me a believer.
Okay.
For instance, the guy who plays Wolverine, Hugh Jackman.
Mm-hmm.
When I first saw it, I said, this guy cannot be Wolverine. He's not the height. He's not the weight. He's not Wolverine.
Right.
But he sold me on Wolverine towards the end because he really got into the role. So... again, if this guy were to get into the role and get into the Conan, then he'll make me a believer. So just looking at a still will not do it. I would really have to see the picture and see if he actually got it.
Okay.
But
fair enough.
But it can be done.
I'm hoping. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of faithful movie adaptations, and one of them is The Watchmen, which I love, both the graphic novel and the adaption. Into the big screen, and even with the Tales of the Black Freighter movie comic really worked well, just like in the comic itself. So I'm kind of hoping that there'll be another great combination of what was printed versus what's on the screen.
I mean, to me, one that looked like something printed was 300 from Frank Miller.
Mm-hmm.
If you see the graphic novel and you see the movie, even the way he shot the movie, it sometimes he would speed up. Actually, he would slow things down.
Right.
And it looked like a clipping. And in fact, you can even see things, it's actual scenes, especially when soldiers are going down into the pit towards the beginning. That was taken straight from the book. So I was looking at the book. So to me, that is the truest adaptation I've seen yet.
Okay.
So I got to commend them for it.
Okay, great. Arnold, did you have any last questions?
Yes, actually. Are there any up-and-coming new titles that you think... young readers might want to look out for? Anything that might interest new readers, that new generation that you think needs to be captured?
Okay, that's a good point. As far as something existing out there, we're just rehashing the same thing, but the thing is, we're just doing new stories. So which one? It all depends on the writer and the team that you're working on. I don't know how to capture an audience. If I knew that, I think I'd be a millionaire right now. So it's really hard to foresee who your audience is going to be. So as far as coming up with the next great character, I don't know what that is. The future will say. But as far as the characters we already have and we're enjoying, as long as you have a good team working on it, a good writer, a good penciler, a good inker, if they're faithful to the character, it's going to show. And people will pick up on it. The thing is, we need an audience to start picking it. Mm-hmm. So we need that. And something I was going to say before, the comics are not selling as what they used to, but I've been hearing that what's really selling is the graphic novels. Because a lot of people don't have patience anymore. And because the collector that used to collect isn't there anymore, there's still some, which are the ones that are buying the regular books. But the newer kids nowadays, instead of spending a month waiting for a 22-page book, I might as well wait 6 months and say, you know what? I got the compilation. I got 10, 12 books and one book. And I can read the whole story saga. And that's actually what's selling. So Barnes & Noble, even in the library, if you pick these up, you know what I'm talking about. It's you just read the entire saga of whatever it is. And it kind of gets rid of the riffraff. But the majority of the sales for Marvel and DC are in those compilation books. And here's a plug for me.
Okay.
I just found out through Marvel that as of 2 weeks ago, they put a couple of the Spider-Mans that I did called Spider-Man Complete Clone Saga, Epic Book 3. So apparently, I don't know what issues they were, but something from the Clone Saga that I did many years ago, they just put it all together inside one of those graphic novels.
Great. Well, hopefully the library will get it in the future. So, again, I mean, it makes sense, especially now in these tough economic times, which I hate saying, but, you know, a graphic novel is a way of saving money, and you get the whole story rather than having to wait. So.
Yeah. And, you know, believe it or not, I take my daughter over to the library, and, again, not only can you get DVDs, which you can enjoy, but even the graphic novels. She's getting into stuff that, again, either I can't afford or not willing to buy at the moment. But you guys carry.
Yep.
And I'm thankful for that because you're opening up a new generation. There are no comic shops. Well, I'm sorry. There are comic shops.
Limited.
Limited. Very limited. But there are no 7-Elevens or quick access to comics as what it used to be.
Right.
And you're just swamped here at the library, and you have your own kids section, so you know you can entice them with those.
Right.
So I'm very thankful that you have that, and I really think that our new generation, we're going to get quite a few from that section right there.
Well, I hope so, too. So on that note, Ralph, I thank you so much for this podcast interview.
Well, thank you.
Arnold, thank you for showing up and being part of this podcast.
My pleasure.
So, again, this is going to be hopefully the first of many podcast interviews we're going to have with Ralph and our future guests. Ralph will definitely be around for future programs, which I'm going to tell you in just a moment. But, again, thank you to everyone.
If you would like to meet Ralph in person and attend his How to Draw Comics program, write down these two important dates. The first date will be on September 17th at 4 p.m., he will be appearing at the Kendall Lakes Library Branch. And on September 18th at 11 a.m., he will be appearing at the Kendall Library Branch. For more information, visit www.mdpls.org or call those specific branches for more information. Good night, folks.